Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is April the 4th in the year 2013 at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, and we've got a very, very special show for you today. We are guests today at Commonwealth Academy, which is a co-educational college preparatory day school for average to superior students from 3rd to 12th grade who benefit from small classes, designed to address various learning styles, including students who have organizational attention and learning difficulties. And this was actually organized by the Northern Virginia chapter of CHAD. For anybody who's listened to the show, you're very familiar with CHAD. CHAD is Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And the Northern Virginia CHAD chapter is a local support group. For most of you who know about CHAD, they have online information at chadd.org. Lots of really, really good information on an ongoing basis. Note, they just updated their website. I think it went live a couple days ago. So for our existing listeners who are familiar with it, go check it out because there's a lot of really good things going with that. If you're in the Northern Virginia area and you're interested in joining the Northern Virginia chapter of CHAD, you can do so. Just email northern-virginia@chadd.net. Our guest today is Dr. Clifford Sussman, and our topic is where are my notes? Got so much going on. Answers to teen questions most don't ask. And our bulk of our content today is really driven off of questions submitted by the juniors and seniors here at Commonwealth Academy. I want to get into the meat of the show, but real quick, a few announcements. The regional CHAD conference this year is scheduled for May the 4th at 8:30, from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Sheraton in Dallas, Texas. And for more information on that, you can just go to chadd.org. And I think the early bird special has been extended to April 8th. So if you're in that area or you're interested in going, I would encourage you to check that out. As a reminder to all our listeners, Attention Talk Radio is a part of the Attention Talk Network, which would include Attention Talk Video and Attention Talk News. Attention Talk Video is a talk show format very similar to this, just shorter. And Attention Talk News is a subscription-based program that has highlights of Attention Talk News shows, Attention Talk Radio, and Attention Talk Video, along with other things. For those Facebook people, catch us at facebook.com/Attention Talk Radio, and you'll get the updates on everything in the Attention Talk Network. Let's see. With that, I think we've got the bulk of announcements out of the way. Again, with us in our satellite studio is Dr. Clifford Sussman. Dr. Sussman is a board-certified physician in psychiatry and neurology, specializing in psychotherapy for children over 8 years, adolescents, and young adults. His areas of treatment include anxiety disorders, simple phobias, ADHD disorders, learning disabilities, mood and autism, spectrum disorders, and many others. If you want to learn more about Dr. Sussman or you want to contact him, the best place to go is his website at CliffordSussmanMD.com. With that, Dr. Sussman, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here today. Our juniors and seniors have submitted some questions that we're going to ask you. We've kind of broken them into two different groups: addiction and misuse questions, and then stimulant-related questions. And I guess to kick stuff off, recently there was an article printed in the New York Times that's been very controversial with regard to substances. And so I think let's start with the can a person get addicted to ADHD medications?
Thanks for having me on your show, Jeff. So this question gets asked a lot. Can I get addicted to my ADHD medication? Well, if you have ADHD, if you meet the criteria for it, if you have the symptoms and you're taking medications as prescribed by a doctor and using them the right way, you're extremely unlikely to become addicted, or as doctors would say, dependent on ADHD medications. And it's also noteworthy that if you take psychostimulants for ADHD, you're no more likely to become addicted to other substances. So
I've heard it said that if you take stimulant medications properly, it's actually safer than aspirin. Is that an accurate statement to your knowledge? Or?
Well, certainly from an overdose perspective, it's probably accurate. It's more dangerous to overdose on aspirin. I think it would be incorrect to say that any medication is completely safe. And you're looking at a lot of different factors when you're comparing the safety of two different drugs. There are certainly risks to taking ADHD medications, but there's also really great benefits. And so I think it's important for anyone trying to decide whether to take ADHD medications to weigh those risks and the benefits and to be informed of both.
How would a person know if they're addicted to ADHD medications?
Well, while this is unlikely, you may suspect that you're having a problem with addiction if you find that you need to take more and more of your stimulant to have the same effect, which would be called tolerance. But keep in mind that you don't have, just because you have tolerance does not mean that you're addicted. It's just one of many signs, and it doesn't necessarily have to be there. Other signs that you may be actually having a dependence problem with the medications could be that you're breaking the law to get access to it, you know, buying it illegally, misusing it, that you're taking it despite health risks that you know of, that you're taking it despite a disastrous effect on your relationships or on your school performance, perhaps because you're using too much and not sleeping at all. So those are different signs that if you have any of those types of signs, you should definitely talk to your doctor about it.
How about addiction to ADHD stimulants in relationship to alcohol, drugs, marijuana, cocaine? Are any of these substances ones that you will become more likely to become addicted to? And how does that compare with ADHD medications in terms of addiction?
All right. Well, you are, just by having ADHD, not by taking ADHD medications, but just by being diagnosed with ADHD, it does raise your risk of having any substance use disorder, just using any of those list of substances you mentioned, perhaps twice as much as the general population. So people with ADHD are at higher risk of having a substance use problems in general. And that's probably because there's many reasons, but I think probably one of the main reasons is that ADHD doesn't just affect your executive functioning, but it also affects your reward system. To put it simply, the theory is that people with ADHD are more motivated by short-term reward than long-term reward. They want an instant gratification. So this is what all the studies are showing, that when you follow people with ADHD long-term, regardless of whether they took medication or not, they're more likely to become addicted to the other substances. Another reason for that may be that they self-medicate on certain substances because they've been misdiagnosed or haven't been diagnosed, because some of these substances act like the drugs that you take for ADHD. So among the ones you listed, there's cocaine, there's marijuana, there's alcohol, there's other illicit substances. Let's not forget about nicotine. The drugs that ADHD people with ADHD are most vulnerable to having problems with are cocaine, marijuana, and nicotine. And cocaine and nicotine make sense because those are drugs that have a stimulant effect on the brain.
Cocaine, nicotine, those do they have an impact on dopamine in the mind? Dopamine is a key neurotransmitter in ADHD. Would those drugs have an impact on dopamine, which is why a person might be more inclined to be attracted to it?
Yeah. Well, dopamine is a neurotransmitter that's involved in the reward system that I was referencing before. So neurotransmitters are like chemicals that are in our brain, and they send signals throughout our brain. And the reward system involves not only the neurotransmitter dopamine, but also norepinephrine and serotonin. And the levels of these neurotransmitters in general are increased when you take any stimulant medication. And they're greatly involved in this theory of reward, where people with ADHD want a sooner reward. Although, to get into the details of it would be complicated, because the brain is by far the most complicated organ in the brain and in the body. So
I get my eyes kind of glaze over when I hear about the neurotransmitters, dopamine and serotonin. But there's a our listeners that are interested, if you go out to Attention Talk video, we did an interview with Linda Rogley, who's a coach in North Carolina, and she actually has caricatures. She's got dopamine, she's got little characters, like he's got an arrow through his head, a cocktail, and some flippers on to represent its dopamine. Is a fun way of remembering. So for anybody out there who has a hard time remembering those, she's got some great cartoons and stuff and faces to kind of put to that. One of the questions submitted says, marijuana, and why is it not a stimulant? How does it impair attention for up to 2 days? Can you speak to that?
All right. Well, yeah, this was from a question someone asked about marijuana, and if it's not a stimulant, what is it? Well, marijuana is a cannabinoid. It affects completely different kinds of receptors in the brain called cannabinoid receptors. But what I think is more important to understand is that theoretically, one reason that this might be such an attractive drug for people with ADHD is because it has an initial, its onset is very quick. You smoke it, right? And so, it does have an initial effect that for some people is like euphoria. For other people, it gives them a sense of being in control of things. And so while this isn't exactly a stimulant effect, it does seem to be a very reinforcing effect for people with ADHD, and all teenagers for that matter. The rate of marijuana use is going up and up. But your question about how long the effect can last is a good one, because while the initial effect can last for a few hours of marijuana, the most intense effect, it takes 4 to 5 days for marijuana to reach its peak level in the blood. It can take about 7 to 30 days to get rid of the marijuana in your blood completely. And you can have residual effects from the marijuana in your blood, particularly if you use heavily and use a lot and use often. And, furthermore, if you talk to people on college campuses, they'll tell you that, and that's where marijuana is probably the most popular, they'll tell you that they'll sometimes get a marijuana hangover that lasts a lot longer than the hangover you get from alcohol. Sometimes like 2 days after you smoke, you're just not, your intention is impaired. Your focus is impaired, which is not great for ADHD.
So this is a great question, and I'm learning a lot here myself, is what I think I'm hearing you say is that by smoking marijuana, you get the feeling, but there's a residual effect that lasts a while, and it does impair attention for a period of time. And if you are struggling with attention and you're smoking marijuana and there's residual effects with attention, it's kind of like a double whammy, if you will. Is that an accurate way of putting that?
That's accurate. And I would, it's kind of disturbing that, so many people take stimulants and marijuana. It's almost like they cancel each other out after a while.
Well, I know as a coach, I'd have to say probably 40% of the people that come to me that I'm coaching actually are using some type of substance, and marijuana is not that uncommon. And I've learned something here today just to have a conversation with them and say, listen, this is actually maybe making things a little bit worse. Another question that's kind of come up by mission is can I drink and take ADHD meds?
Okay. Well, I think if whenever you're making a decision like this, you have to be informed of the risks. People do this all the time. So obviously you can do it, but it's a risky decision, because alcohol is a CNS depressant, which is the opposite of a stimulant. CNS stands for central nervous system, and the drugs we take for ADHD are central nervous system stimulants. So alcohol has almost the opposite effect on the brain and the body that stimulants do. And if you mix them, it's like what lay people will call mixing an upper and a downer. Basically, your body's getting lots of confusing signals. Take your heart, for example. It's being told to speed up, and it's being told to slow down at the same time. And that can cause things that are very dangerous, like arrhythmias. So So it is dangerous to mix substances in general, and specifically alcohol and stimulants. And while there's lots of risks in using alcohol alone, I would say that it's less risky if you do choose to use alcohol to, you know, at least wait until the psychostimulant is out of your system.
Fascinating. Part of this question I'm really interested in, and it starts with self-medication. It talks about coffee, cocaine, cigarettes, prescription drugs. What really stands out to me is like Red Bull, these high-energy drinks. Can you speak to using these as self-medication? And I'm personally really interested in that because I've been a scoutmaster for a period of time, and I remember taking kids out, and we'd stop, and these kids would get two or three of these cans of this stuff, and I would forbid it because, like, you're not getting in here with that. Yet the parents, don't even think they were realizing they were doing it. I've seen a lot of stuff come out about how what a negative effect that can have. So if you could speak to just the self-medicating and these things in particular, that.
Yes. Self-medicating is, again, I think self-medicating is such a big problem, in part because there's so much stigma attached to ADHD, and because so many people don't get diagnosed and they find other ways to stimulate their brain. And all those things you mentioned, Red Bull, 5-hour energy, not forget like other types of caffeine pills like Nodos, all those sodas with caffeine, Mountain Dew is a popular one. There's one called Jolt that has twice the caffeine. They're very popular drugs of choice for self-medicating because they're very readily available, very easy to access. There's a lot of risks and danger to self-medicating. In particular, you're not being monitored by a doctor. So those medications can have the same effect on your body and your heart as ADHD medications can, except without being monitored by a doctor. Not only that, but you don't know how much caffeine is in the drinks you have. It's not when you get a script, there's a dose and you know what you're taking. You don't know how much you're getting with these drugs. The way the drug is released into the blood is different. So with drinks like caffeine, you can get a spike and then a crash. It may not last as long as you need it to be focused for a long time. There's many other downsides of self-medicating.
Can you actually define what self-medicating is?
Oh, I define self-medicating as using psychostimulants to treat your ADHD that are not prescribed by your physician.
Would exercising, to maybe an extreme, be a form of self-medicating?
It could be. Some people can stimulate their brain, perhaps through endorphins or by speeding up their heart rate and getting the blood flow going faster through the brain rather, through exercise. So it's not a much talked about form of self-medication, but I think that's probably an excellent question that deserves a lot of, further research.
I asked that question because I know several individuals that actually use exercise as a part of their multimodal treatment plan. One in particular is Rob Tedisco. We've had him on the show several times. He's a huge, huge ADHD community asset. He advocates. He's got ADD himself. He's a lawyer. He does a lot. He actually raises money running marathons every year. And he talks about how he the running and intersecting that in his life, as he describes, kind of helps him self-medicate and kind of keep his focus. And that was just an interesting question.
Seeing a doctor, and the doctor is aware of his exercise and has approved it, has cleared him to do exercise. He may be using stimulants while he's doing exercise, which is normally okay, as long as the doctor is okay with it. Then I don't see it as self-medicating. But even if it were self-medicating, it's probably like a less harmful form of self-medicating than a lot of those other choices.
I want to run to a break real quick for our listeners. If you want to learn more about Dr. Sussman, go to CliffordSussmanMD.com. Also, if you want to learn a little bit more about Commonwealth Academy, go to commonwealthacademy.org. And of course, as we mentioned earlier, if you're in the Northern Virginia area and are interested in joining the Northern Virginia CHAD group, just go email northern-virginia@chadd.net. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We are live at Commonwealth Academy. We're here with Dr. Sussman having a great conversation, answering some of the questions of some of the juniors and seniors here at the Academy. I got another real question I really like, and that is, what are the dangers of using ADHD medications and pulling all-nighters, particular study? And this is a real hot topic now, and it also leads into where I want to go with this is the impact of sharing meds, which I want to kind of cover separately, but let's begin by addressing using stimulants as a tool, study tool, and staying up all night.
This is a really hot topic on, especially on college campuses, because when you go to college, your workload greatly increases, and you're expected to do a lot more of your work independently. And pulling all nighters is not just common among students with ADHD who procrastinate, although it may be more so. It's common among all college students, and there are college students who will, as you mentioned before, try to get a hold of stimulants from their ADHD friends or through illegal means so they can have an aid for them to pull all-nighters. So let's address the risks of pulling an all-nighter first, you know, regardless of whether you're using a medication to do it or not. Just pulling an all-nighter in general, what you do is you stay up all night and don't sleep the night before, usually an exam, but maybe to finish a paper. And, you know, what happens is you're trying to learn information, but you're becoming more and more sleep deprived. And, you know, what will usually happen is you'll go to the test or you'll try to finish your paper, and the work won't be as good because you're exhausted. And a lot of the things that you try to learn while you're pulling the all-nighter don't really get learned that well. Your memory sort of breaks down when you're very sleep deprived. It can also have some other side effects, pulling an all-nighter, like becoming irritable or cranky or even perhaps manic, where you get this sort of euphoric, inflated mood from pulling an all-nighter. So, you know, it's sort of a dangerous thing to do whether you use a medication to do it or not.
In the past, we've interviewed Dr. Roberto Olivardia on sleep issues in ADHD. And in that interview, if I recall correctly, we've also had a couple other interviews with him, others. And sometimes people that are sleep deprived or have sleep apnea can be misdiagnosed with ADD because they're so tired they have, looks like, and can present as a attention problem when it might be a sleep problem. But not to get into that, but what I'm hearing is that if you are sleep deprived, if you have been pulling all nighter, my question to you, can that have an impact on attention? And if you already have ADD and now you're sleep deprived, you're procrastinating, waiting for the last second, and you're doing that stuff, but are you really doing yourself a service? So is that an accurate statement? Is that
it's very accurate to say it can have a negative impact on your attention and all of your ADHD symptoms, And to go one step further, it can, when you then take your stimulant the next day, it's not going to work as well.
Combining stimulants. That can't be a good idea.
Right. Well, combining stimulants is, it has an additive effect at least, and probably a synergistic effect. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. If you use two different stimulants, and they can be any of the list of stimulants we've described today, including your ADHD medication. Let's say that one stimulant raises your heartbeat 10 beats per minute, and another stimulant raises your heartbeats 10 beats per minute, right? All of a sudden, when you use two stimulants, your heartbeat is going up 20 beats per minute, or maybe even more than that, 30 or 40. Now, if it's 20, that would be an additive effect. If it's 30 or 40, or if the effect multiplies, that's called a synergistic effect. Both are probably possible when you combine stimulants. So it's very dangerous to combine stimulants. And I'll even suggest to some people that if they're going to like smoke or drink coffee or use other substances while they take their ADHD medication, it's safer to just stop their ADHD medication while they're doing those other substances so that they're not mixing stimulants.
Fascinating. ADHD medications, particularly in college, one of the questions is, what medications kids want to buy or steal when it comes to stimulants? Vyvanse is not typically one of them. Why is that?
Well, Vyvanse has a one-hour delay before it works. The reason for that is that it's called a prodrug. It's like Dexedrine, the commonly used stimulant, with something attached to it. And it goes through your body, through your digestive system, and then gets broken up in your liver. And it doesn't go into the blood until it's done that. And that's why there's a one-hour delay. Now, if you're looking to get a high, if you're looking to get a buzz, you're not going to sit there and wait an hour. In fact, addiction theory states that what makes a substance addictive is how fast it kicks in. And that sort of ties into what we were talking about with immediate reward and ADHD. But also, it kind of explains why something like heroin and something like nicotine, obviously the heroin being a much more powerful drug, are equally as addictive as each other because they both work right away.
So because of the time release part of Vyvanse, it's not as attractive, so they're asking for the other more fast-acting versions of it.
You can't crush it. It comes in a capsule. So.
Side note here is we've got a bunch of juniors and seniors that are getting ready to kind of go to college, and this is interesting to me because I'm not so sure they're really aware of it, but stimulant medications are classified as type 2 stimulants, so they're highly restricted in terms of their distribution because of the abuse, and because they're classified as type 2, as I understand, it's a felony to sell or give stimulant medication to another individual. So it might, this is something that's real big deal. You go off to college and maybe somebody knows that you have this and they'll offer you some stuff. You can get in a lot of trouble just by giving somebody a pill.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And at the very least, you know, you may put your own ability if you prescribe these medications in jeopardy. You may have to go without your own medicines if you get caught doing something like that.
And this is fascinating to me. I had heard at a conference a couple of years ago, we were talking about drug diversion. And one of the things that I thought was fascinating is if you have your meds, it's a good idea to take it, put them in a different location or in a different container, just so people are not aware of it and they see it. And this was an interesting story to me because I had heard, I forget where it was, but people would go to open houses. Like, I'm selling my house. And so people would walk around and they would go through the medicine cabinets looking for stimulant medications. And I was like, it's a brilliant idea, but which is two things. Number one, it's a brilliant idea that they're doing it and that's how much they want it. But that's another reason, particularly in college, that you might want to take them, put them in different containers so that that doesn't happen. Number one. And number two is if it did happen and it had your name on it, you know, it just can get you in a lot of trouble.
Sure. Absolutely. And then there's lots of, you know, parties that are thrown in people's college dorms all over a campus where that can happen. So, yeah, I completely agree.
So So one thing I want to emphasize is when it comes to this stuff, if you have it, just be really careful. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble, and it's in demand. The competitive nature of colleges these days, everybody's trying to get a leg up, and just I kind of enough said on that. We've been talking a little bit, a lot about the misuse of medications and addiction. Let's talk about like stimulant-related questions. So one of the questions is what are the different types? There's like this Adderall, there's Ritalin, there's Concerta. Can you speak to those and try to help everybody understand that a little bit?
Right. So there's two general classes of stimulants. And then within those classes, there's long-acting stimulants and short-acting stimulants. So the two general classes are methylphenidate drugs and amphetamine based drugs. They're both stimulants. They both have a stimulant effect on the brain. But because they have a slightly different mechanism of how they work, they may have slightly different side effects. You may tolerate one class and not tolerate another. And you'll be more likely to tolerate some drugs that are in the same class if you don't tolerate the other class. So let's go through some of the methylphenidate drugs first. There's Ritalin. Ritalin comes in a short and a long form. There's Concerta, which is a long-acting form. There is Metadate, which is comes in various lengths. Focalin, one of the most recent methylphenidate drugs, and that comes in a short and a long form. Among the amphetamine drugs, and there's also actually a patch that you can put on called Vatrana patch, which is very long acting. You can keep the patch on all day. The amphetamine drugs would include things like mixed amphetamine salts, or better known as Adderall, Adderall XR being the long acting form of those. There's also Vyvanse, as you mentioned, which is it has dexedrine in it. Dexedrine is being an amphetamine drug. So those are probably the most commonly prescribed.
I'll be honest with you. I've been doing this for a while, and when I always hear that my face kind of glazes over a little bit like that. And so I'm going to ask you a question. At its most basic level, there's the active ingredient that's there. And then it's the recipe or the formula is a little different and marketed by kind of different companies. Is that a fair way of putting that in context?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
so we have these two different types of stimulants. Those are the active ingredients. There's a little bit different recipes, and then there's different ways of delivery, which would be like fast acting or extended release or even a Vyvanse, which goes longer, which is just how it's encapsulated and how it's released.
Right, and they peak at different times. And, in some studies, one might have more of one side effect than another. And a lot of it has to do with marketing, right?
This is an interesting question. Just since I have an expert here, I can ask this. I had heard somewhere, and I'm not so sure there's research, that sometimes some people respond differently or better to one of these types or the other. Is it common where a person might start off as a younger kid and respond very well to Ritalin, but later in life maybe the Adderall would do a little bit better? Or is it typically when you get dialed into the right one, it's kind of good for life?
The truth is that regardless of what stimulant you're taking, if you take it for a long time, there's a risk you'll develop tolerance, which you may recall I said doesn't mean you're addicted to it. It just means you may have to keep increasing the dose. One thing some patients do when they become tolerant to drugs in one class, they try a drug in another class. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, because stimulants are actually cross-tolerant. So you can get tolerance from one category from using a drug in another category. Just like you can get tolerance to an ADHD medicine by using a lot of those non-stimulants we were talking about. You don't see people switching drugs a lot when they find one that they like.
What about non-stimulant drugs like Strattera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a bunch of non-stimulant drugs. And there's one that acts sort of like an antidepressant, and in that category would be Strattera and Wellbutrin. And there's actually a fancy form of Wellbutrin made for ADHD now called Aplenzin. And like Wellbutrin is actually also used as an antidepressant. Strattera is very antidepressant-like. And when I say they're antidepressant, like, I mean, you take them every day. They take several weeks to build up in your bloodstream and to have their effects on your brain. So unlike a stimulant where you get an effect right away, it could take a week to 6 weeks to get an effect on one of these medications, provided you're on the right dose. And also, they don't work as well as stimulants, maybe about half as well at best. So why do people take it, right? I mean, the reason is that sometimes they don't tolerate stimulants. These medications, like all medications that are, you know, stimulants are incredibly effective, but they're also risky. And these medications, while they may not be as effective, you can make the case that they're a lot less risky. Plus, they cover you in those hours in the day. They're in your blood all the time, so they cover you in the hours of the day when you're not taking a stimulant. So you can even combine them in some cases. And then there's other non-stimulants like clonidine and Intunib that are actually blood pressure medications that seem to have some benefit for ADHD symptoms. And they, you know, they may have a side effect of drowsiness, but they do work faster than the antidepressant-like drugs.
What are the long-term effects on the brain of ADHD medications, more specifically stimulants?
Right. This is like one of those really hard to answer questions because of how complicated the brain is. We've been doing animal research that suggests that there are long-term effects of stimulants, and you know, more and more research on humans that, but it's hard to translate all what it all means. We just know that there probably are long-term effects of stimulants on the brain. There might be some negative and some positive effects that sort of cancel each other out. But the thing you should know is that the younger you are, the earlier in development your brain, the more likely you are to have a long-term negative effect of stimulants on the brain, regardless of what that effect is. So once you're an adolescent, your brain is pretty well developed, and even more so when you're an adult. So the older you are, the less you have to worry about a long-term effect of stimulants on the brain.
Now, they have been using stimulant medications to treat ADD going back to in the 30s. Is that accurate?
It's you know, I don't remember the exact date, but it is around that time.
We had done an interview with Dr. Russ Ramsey out of University of Pennsylvania. We were talking about the history of ADD and going back to Fidgety Phil and before that, all that stuff, the history. So anybody's interested, go back and listen to it. You can get some details on that.
They call it minimal brain dysfunction when they first were treating it.
That was, I remember them calling that back in the 70s when I grew up. Let's see, I had another question. Oh, I did want to make this point is that those that are out there as a coach, when I'm working with somebody, a lot of times, well, should I take medications or not? And I have to say, from my perspective, it really is a very much an individual decision. And I always bring up, it's kind of like the point counterpoint. One side, you talk about the things that you've just talked about. Then I also kind of go the other side and say, let's talk about self-esteem. What's the impact to you long-term, particularly for a younger child? Sit down, stop, don't do that. All the negativity over a long period of time. What are the long-term impacts of that? And I know that they're trying to do some research, and I'm not so sure it's as easy to pinpoint that, but it's not an easy decision no matter how you do it. But I do think it's worth understanding both sides of the argument. And again, I think this is one of those things that's debated a lot, but it comes down to individual decision, at least from my perspective. And I know as a coach, usually what I'm coaching people on is an informed choice, not necessarily which choice.
Yeah, I'd love to comment on that point, Nick. It's an excellent one. That, you know, we can talk about long-term risks of stimulant use, but there's also long-term risks of not using stimulants. And, you know, and self-esteem is a good example. You know, what's going to happen to your functioning if you're not focused in class and getting your work done and not learning as much? And you could even make the case that that has some direct long-term consequences on the brain. So you always have to weigh the risk and the benefit.
We want to go to a commercial break again for our listeners out there to learn more, or if you want to contact Dr. Sussman, go to cliffordsussmanmd.com. If you want to learn more about Commonwealth Academy, go to commonwealthacademy.org. And if you like to join and support Chad, we encourage that, and specifically the Northern Virginia chapter. For that, just email northern-virginia@chadd.net. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're having a great discussion here with Dr. Sussman. Dr. Sussman, a few other questions. We were talking earlier about the stimulant medications, and there's been a couple questions about EKGs. I think the physicians are actually required to get EKGs for people on stimulant medications on a regular basis. Can you speak to that?
Well, I order an EKG for all my clients who are starting on a stimulant for a first time if they've never had one before. An EKG is also called an electrocardiogram. It's a screening test that can show – it's a very non-invasive screening test where they put some stickers on your chest and they monitor your heart, and they can show if there's any like major heart problems such as congenital heart problems. So the reason I order an EKG before starting people on medications is to make sure that they don't have some congenital heart problem that could affect their heart and make it more risky for them to take the medication. Now, that's assuming you're treating young children and teenagers because they tend to have healthy hearts. If you're treating older individuals, there may be more reasons to get regular EKGs and monitor it more carefully because they're more at more risk for heart problems. But if they've ever had a normal EKG and they're pretty young and they come in to see me, I won't usually have to order.
Next question. We are dealing with teenagers here. I love these things. It's like, I remember Art Linkler's kids say the darndest things. Kids ask some great questions. So this one's sexual dysfunction when taking ADD meds. Can meds have an impact here?
They're not. Stimulants are not one of the drugs that are more known for causing sexual problems, but it certainly can. And the effects of a stimulant on sexuality and sex can be variable. It can increase your libido. It can decrease your libido. It can make it either harder or easier to get an erection. So it has variable effects on different people, and if you are having any sexual problems and you're using a stimulant, it's important to talk to your doctor.
Thank you. There was, I was just having to make a note. It's interesting because there's not a lot of research out there, ADHD and on sex and intimacy. Although I have to say, we've actually done two shows with Gina Pera. She's a well-known author, and she works with a support group out in the northern part of California. And she's done some surveys and stuff, and we've done two shows, The Impact of ADHD on Sex and Intimacy. It was interesting because we talk about stimulants on it, but when you start thinking about distractibility and impulsivity, and you start talking about intimacy, you can begin to see how there's an issue there. And interesting enough, in the interview, she's had lots of discussions with people individually and how some of them don't seem to have a sex drive and some of them seem to have a sex drive that just kind of goes forever. And I just, for anybody who's interested to go listen to that show, there's not a lot of research on it. But the other thing that she did say is that she has spoken to a few people, and there's been some women who have never had an orgasm that did after they took stimulant medications. And I thought that was fascinating. That's not research. It's just an anecdotal type thing. So,
so let me add a couple points now that you mentioned that. One is that stimulant use or treating your ADHD in general can help your relationships and enhance your sex life as a possible benefit. And let me also say, because I forgot to mention it before, that the non-stimulants that we were talking about before, they're more likely to affect sexual performance than stimulant medication. And actually, Strattera is more likely to make it harder, for example, to get an erection, whereas Wellbutrin is actually more likely to enhance sexual performance.
Some more questions. Driving a car on Ritalin. Speak to that for a second.
Well, let me first say that there's no real contraindication to driving while on Ritalin, and you can make the case that there's a lot more potential benefits than risks from driving a car while on Ritalin, the main one being that you focus better, you pay attention better, you're probably less likely to get into an accident, although it hasn't been heavily researched. And, you know, and in fact, they'll prescribe stimulants for drivers who don't have ADHD who fall asleep at the wheel. Now, that doesn't mean there's no risk. I mean, certainly you could get irritability as a side effect that might affect your driving, things like that. But overall, it's not contraindicated.
One thing that is very clear in the research is those with ADHD have a higher propensity to get traffic tickets, to get car accidents, et cetera. That's pretty well documented. As a host of the show, you never know when somebody's not going to show. So you always got to have something in your hip pocket. So I've always got a recorded show so that if they don't show up, then I can kind of run it. And what's in queue right now is a show that we did with Deborah. She's a listener of ours, and she's dyslexic with ADD. And I remember specifically in this interview, and I can't tell you when it's going to be released. And I'll know. I can tell you after it's over with. But she talked about how when she went on, she got the ADHD diagnosis and she went on stimulant medications. It was amazing to her for the first time she wasn't anxious driving because she was calm enough. She wasn't worried about the stuff. And I just thought it was interesting. It's a fascinating interview. She's got dyslexia and she struggled her life, but she's got really clever things like she uses Google search for spell checks. It's better than Microsoft Word because it offers you alternatives, even in a sentence, if you don't know what the definition is. So anyway, just look out for that particular show. Here's another great, great question. ADHD meds and athletic performance.
Well, again, I would say that there's no like absolute contraindication in general for whether or not to take to take stimulants and do a sport that like, you know, I don't just tell all patients doing sports to get off their psychostimulant. And I think like with driving, in some cases, psychostimulants may enhance your athletic performance because it raises your focus and alertness. And it can perhaps make you follow directions better from the coach. Now, because it's a stimulant, it does raise your heart rate and has some cardiovascular effects such as that one. And therefore, if you're doing like a heavy endurance sport, like marathon running, you may run out of breath sooner. So for some athletes, it might be contraindicated, you know, for some specific situations or if you have pre-existing heart problems. So you should talk to your doctor about it.
You're the expert here, and I got to be careful because I'm just a coach. I get interview these subject matter experts. So I get these tips recently. Matter of fact, I think on Monday we're airing Attention Talk video where I interviewed Dr. Andrew Cutler, who is a sports psychiatrist, works with the Devil Rays and some other individuals. And I was talking to him about this particular stuff in stimulants. And if I remember correctly, the stimulants can actually help dehydrate you. Is that accurate?
Yes. Well, stimulants, they can act as a diuretic. So I think that's the important thing to add is that, and I'm glad you reminded me that if you are going to use stimulants while you do sports, and this is what I actually tell all my clients who are athletes using stimulants, is make sure you hydrate, and not just water, but electrolytes as well.
And I was just about to say that, because one of the things from that interview that blew me away was those with ADHD need to focus on hydration even more, because if you're on the stimulants, a diuretic, it's going to deplete the water. But more importantly, and I'm not going to word this right, but it's like with less water, the imbalance can impact with ADHD, and it creates more problems and kind of sends you over the top as compared to somebody else. So one, it might help a little bit, but at the same time, it can hurt. So these things get a little complicated.
Yeah, no, that's true. And again, you have to weigh the risks and benefits.
We also did a show, I think a year ago, on sports and sports culture, which is fascinating because I always got frustrated about articles that say sport exercise is good or bad. There's like going back and forth. To me, it all depends. And in that show, we talked about competitive sports, non-competitive sports, individual sports. And one thing that I learned in that interview that was fascinating is that team sports can be particularly challenging for those with ADD and learning disabilities because of learning the complexities of some of the schemes that are being taught to kids, like playing 13 in football aren't like they were before. And really, those attention issues can kind of come and kind of create some problems where maybe the meds help just to kind of keep up and learn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that that there's not probably enough credit given to athletes for how much they have to learn and focus and pay attention and just, you know, how tedious, like, for example, in football, learning all those different plays can be, and how much even more tedious it could be for someone with ADHD.
We have two other questions here that are kind of interesting, and this one I'm really excited about to hear. What is a real panic attack?
A real panic attack. So, I mean, now we're getting into another category of psychiatric illness, which I also treat, and that would be anxiety disorders. There's sometimes some overlap in differential diagnosis between ADHD and anxiety disorder, so it is a very relevant topic. And this one was asked by one of the teenagers. So what is a panic attack? A panic attack is an episode of intense anxiety that usually lasts for about 10 minutes. For the person who's experiencing it, it can feel like it's a lot longer than that. And during that episode, they'll typically complain of things like chest pain, that their heart's pounding out of their chest, that they're having trouble breathing. They're becoming all sweaty. They're becoming nauseous. And one of the really common complaints of a panic attack is that you feel like you're going to die. And that's why it leads to a lot of emergency resistance.
Interesting. Is there a trigger to a panic attack?
There can be a trigger. And like one of the well-known triggers is something called agoraphobia, which is a fear of It's a self-consciousness that you get when you're in social situations. It's worrying that the people around you are noticing how anxious you are. And that's the common trigger of panic attacks, but you don't have to have a trigger to have a panic attack. It can occur spontaneously. And if you think you've had one, you should definitely see your doctor.
This next one is very interesting to me because this it basically bipolar symptoms. And what I understand is that bipolar and ADD can present itself very, very, very similar. And sometimes if a mental health professional is not really schooled in it, it can be difficult to tell the difference in those. So can you speak to bipolar symptoms and maybe kind of help differentiate the two?
Yeah. And it's important to differentiate the two. Recent studies at NIH are suggesting that bipolar disorder in young people may be one of the more commonly misdiagnosed or overdiagnosed problems. At the same time, we're talking to adolescents today, and bipolar disorder tends to come on in late teens to early 20s. When it does happen, it's less misdiagnosed in adults. So it's important to be able to tell them apart. So first of all, they're similar because in both bipolar disorder and ADHD, this is why they can look like each other. You can have a high energy state, hyperactivity versus what's called a manic episode in bipolar disorder. Bipolar disorder is a mood disorder, where ADHD is a neurological disorder, a cognitive disorder, a impulse control disorder of executive dysfunction. So they're very different categories. So because of that, there's some important differences. And one is that ADHD is very chronic and pervasive. You always have ADHD. Bipolar disorder is episodic. You may go from being manic to being depressed. Another key difference is that in ADHD, you might stay up all night or
go to bed very late, but you'll almost invariably be really tired the next day and you even have trouble getting out of bed. Whereas if you're going through an active manic episode, you could not sleep for days on end and have too much energy to even need to. You can have even loss of touch with reality types of symptoms in manic episodes that you don't see in ADHD. You know, I think another reason they're confused, by the way, is because in both you might see an increase in risk-taking behaviors, but in ADHD, that would be more chronic again. And in bipolar, that would be only during a manic episode.
They're very different, and they're kind of complicated. And I don't want to oversimplify this, but if you're out there and you've been diagnosed with ADD, but you're questioning bipolar, and again, if I'm oversimplifying, please let me know. But if you find that your moods last for periods of time, because from what I understand is that with ADHD, you can have an emotion type thing, but usually it's resolved relatively quickly, whereas that would be the thing, like, wait a second, this is not going away. That would be more of an indication to go talk to a mental health professional. I mean, I know that there's other things, but by and large, would that be something to look for?
Well, yeah, I mean, you want to look at length of episodes. I think you'd have to describe a lot of the details of the symptoms you're actually experiencing to your doctor to really clearly distinguish them. But keep in mind that you can actually have both. So that makes this even more complicated. You can have them comorbid.
Very well put. We don't have a lot of time left, but we actually have a caller from Florida. And since we're at a school that specializes in attention disorder, she's got a question, so let's see if we can bring her on the line here. Hello, area code
Hello.
Katrina, with us?
Hi, I'm still here.
Turn it up a little bit. Okay, I think we got you.
Okay, great.
Your first name?
Julene.
Julene.
Yes.
Talk to us. What are your questions?
All right, I'll make this as concise as possible. I have a 15-year-old son who is a freshman in high school here, in a regular high school. We had an IEP for him. That can be difficult, you know, to make it work through the system. We have tried every type of schooling. It has gotten worse for my son with social phobia, panic attacks, depression, that kind of thing. We've tried online Florida Virtual here in Florida. We have tried homeschooling. He just couldn't do it. The social thing was too much for him in high school. And I'm at a loss right now for what to do for my child. He is an awesome, very, very smart, bright child. But he does have the focus, extreme focus, attention, time management, organization issues. So I just don't know where to go from here.
Right. Well, you're in a very tough situation. Do you have an educational advocate by any chance?
No.
That's something you might consider. They might help you to navigate all the different options you have, and because you really do have to weigh the risks and benefits of all of them. Let me point out a few little tips that might help you, because there's no simple answer to this situation. One tip to keep in the back of your head is that that anxiety disorders often lead to avoidance. And avoidance makes anxiety disorders worse. So you have a vicious cycle. And when you don't go to school and you're not socializing because you're afraid of socializing, it certainly doesn't help your ability to socialize. So that's a big risk to keeping a kid like this out of school. And I'm sure there's risk to keeping him in school that you're finding out about as well. So you really have to weigh that. And have you had any psychoeducational testing for him?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He has been tested 2 times.
Right. And look, I hear you. A lot of parents get very frustrated with the special educational system in their area or lack thereof.
Right.
Not all places can be as well trained as places like the one I'm in, Commonwealth Academy. But you know, it's frustrating, and you know, you should you know, try to find an advocate you trust, and maybe, you know, talk it over with you know, various mental health professionals, maybe even get a family therapist involved. But I think
we actually have one.
Okay, good. I mean, I think that, you know, just remember that it's it's really important to get him into school, even if it's not the ideal setting.
Okay. When you said something about an educational advocate, how do I find one of those? I mean, who is that? I've never heard of that before, and it just sounds like it would be so helpful.
Well, they're lawyers. They're lawyers who are trained in the school system in your area, so they really know their way around. They know all the options out there. Even if you were at home school, they might have some suggestions for how you could do that, how you could go about doing that. That's really their job is placement. You know, not all psychiatrists like myself are experts on placement. So they're a good place to start. But, you know, your question deserves a much longer answer.
I do have a couple of resources that you might consider. One, we did an interview last October with Dr. Jeffrey Katz. He's in North Virginia, and I found the show incredibly insightful. And in that interview, it kind of lays out at least a framework that's there. Also, we did a series of shows in February with Rob Todisco. He's actually a lawyer that understands the educational side of ADHD and the criminal side. We did a whole series of shows. The second or third one might be just free resources that you can listen to get some information on to kind of help you look around, because I know it can be overwhelming on where to go. But particularly the Jeffrey Katz interview, I learned so much from that. I go back and listen to it sometimes to get the resources, and I think that you might find some tips in there, and or even email him to ask him, because he might be able to help direct you to some resources that could be useful.
That's fantastic. I thank you so much for your help.
Thank you. Thank you for calling into the show.
You're welcome. It's a great show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, we got to wrap things up. We've come to a close. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show. Special thanks to Commonwealth Academy for inviting us, and for the Northern Virginia chapter of CHAD to kind of pull this thing together. Again, if you want to learn more about lost my thought process. Commonwealth Academy, go to commonwealthacademy.org. Again, the Northern Virginia chapter of CHAD, email northern-virginia@adhd.net. And to learn more about Dr. Sussman, it's sussmanmd.com. So with that, thank you very much.
Shire is a leading global specialty biopharmaceutical.
Wow. Things don't always run the way they're supposed to. There we go.